Now, I want to start off with a bit of an observation. It might seem quite obvious, but isn't it true that the human race is always on the hunt for more? It's always searching for better or greater things. Now, this is not necessarily a bad thing. It drives our economies. It has produced great technology. But on the scale of nations, we've had arms races for superiority. We have national races for economic superiority or social superiority. On an international scale, but maybe on a little bit less significant, we have the race for elite athletic performance. People seek to be better than everyone else. Maybe over the last few months, you've been striving for academic excellence. You've been revising and studying to do the best you can in your exams and your coursework. Maybe we seek the better car, the better house, the better job, the better body, or maybe just more comfort, a bit of an easier life. Now, while many of these things are good things, often blessings from God, there is a problem. It's the fact that any of these things, they aren't the best thing. We miss what is truly better. Now, this is one of the issues that the original receivers of this letter to the Hebrews were facing. They were wrestling over what was better. As this letter was read to them, as they gathered to hear it read, the writer addresses these temptations and struggles that they are facing as they are thinking about returning back to their original roots of their religion of Judaism. The question that runs in their minds is this Jesus we're now following really better than what I knew before? The writer wants to answer this question for them, but not just for them, which is why we have it here this evening, but God, through his word, wants to answer it for us too. Is Jesus better than everything else? So, the writer to the Hebrews, he wastes no time in what he wants us to do as he enters this section of his book, and he issues this command. Holy brothers and sisters who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus. This is a strong introduction. He applies what he is about to talk about immediately. He wants us to fix. He wants us to attach. He wants us to focus our thoughts on Jesus Christ. But this isn't a thought that is pulled from nowhere as he starts this introduction. If we think about the passage that was looked at last week in chapter 2, verses 14 and 15, the writer wrote this: since the children have flesh and blood, he, that's Jesus, also shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. Jesus took on his humanity. He became flesh and blood. He became a man just like you and I are human, as real as you and I, so that he might break the power of death. Jesus brings freedom. He was tempted, but he did nothing wrong. He was perfect. He felt pain, excruciating pain on that cross. But he left that tomb and he defeated death for us. Because of all this, the writer to the Hebrews writes, fix your thoughts on Jesus. And then, what are we told about Jesus here? That we acknowledge him as our apostle. The writer here means that he is God's messenger. And also high priest, meaning he is the one who represents us before God and gives us access to God. So if that wasn't enough of a set of reasons to respond and to focus on Jesus, the writer goes on. But the listeners cry. Okay, we've been through the last couple of chapters and we've seen that you've said Jesus is better than the angels and we're on board with that. But here their Jewish instincts are kicking in. What about Moses? The writer to the Hebrews is ready for this question. The showdown is set. Now, it might seem a bit of a strange question to us, kind of setting Moses up against Jesus. Maybe it feels obvious that Jesus is better. But for those believers there in that church who had a Jewish background, it wasn't such a clear result. We have to kind of understand their thinking around Moses and who they understood him to be. And actually that will probably help us to see how, like, the fact that Jesus is greater than Moses will elevate our view of Christ. So, we probably pretty easily understand that Moses is a key character in the Old Testament. He led the people out of Israel from their slavery under the Egyptians, and he communed with God face to face when he received the Ten Commandments. He was the mediator between the Israelites and God, and he established their laws and the vast majority of their cultural framework to the way that they lived. Moses is a key figure for these first century Jewish Christians. He left a huge legacy behind him. This particular incident I'm about to read from Numbers 12, verses 5 to 8, confirms this. Then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud. He stood at the entrance to the tent and summoned Aaron and Miriam. When the two of them stepped forward, he said, "Listen to my words. When there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, reveal myself to them in visions. I speak to them in dreams. But this is not true of my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak face to face, clearly and not in riddles. He sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" God here speaks directly to Miriam and Aaron and tells them and gives them an endorsement of Moses. Moses has stood before God himself and heard the very words of God and seen the form of God. So hopefully it's a bit clearer now why this question was arising. Moses was a significant figure. But this thinking was kind of pulling them back. Moses was great. Like, maybe this Jesus guy isn't what we should be following. And actually, this parallels with the way that we can end up thinking. Think about this for a moment. What are the things that, as a Christian, pull you into your old ways of living? Maybe when you became a Christian, you walked away from a religion that you'd followed for many years, maybe even as a child, or a way of thinking that you had adhered to for years. And sometimes you do look back and think, well, was it right to move away from that thinking? Maybe the old way was right. Maybe Jesus isn't better than that old way of living. Maybe it's old habits that were comfortable, things that feel good and you know are not what God wants you to do, but they seem so satisfying and you want to go back to them. Or maybe you put your hope for a better life in something else. That better job. The exam grades that you'll get in August. Maybe it's just fitting in with those around you. Maybe your appearance, your relationships, your sexuality. When we hear the words of verse 1 in this passage that say, "Holy brothers and sisters who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus," what makes us think We don't want to do that. What in the week distracts us? What even now distracts you from focusing on Jesus? Think about that. Make a mental note, maybe write it down. The receivers of this letter were facing similar issues. They were fighting the pull back to their old ways of living. And the writer's remedy is to show them that Jesus is far better than that thinking. So Moses was great. There's no doubt about that. We've read even God himself endorses Moses. And the writer tells us they were both, that Jesus and Moses were both faithful, as we read in verse 2. But in verse 3, we read that Jesus has been found worthy of greater honor. Now, the writer uses the picture of a house to help us understand that Jesus is better and greater than Moses. This picture of a house is used in two ways. Firstly, he talks about the relationship to the house. Now, I think many of you might be familiar with Grand Designs. It's been a TV program that's been around in British culture for a long time. If you're not familiar with it, it's a TV show about people building the home of their, often of their dreams. These houses are often magnificent things, beautifully designed buildings. Hours have been poured into them. And they're often built with strange or old technologies or new exciting ones. The show often starts in maybe a bit of a muddy patch next to often a caravan, which the people building the house are living in. And they've moved from London and they're starting their new life and they want to run a small holding or something similar. I only half joke about that. But the house begins to be built and the story usually goes that something goes probably a little bit wrong. But it doesn't quite go as wrong as it could do. So there's a bit of jeopardy there. They usually go over their budget. They miss their deadline to be in their house by Christmas. But eventually all ends up well in the end. And they end up with this beautiful house. Now the thing is, this house, this program isn't really about the house, beautiful and as amazing as it might be. Actually, if you think about it, it's about the journey of the people who are building the house. The praise for the remarkable design, for the beautiful finishes that you see in the house is given to those who built and designed it. The awards that go for House of the Year, they're given to not the house itself, but to the people who designed it. It's the same picture that the writer to the Hebrews is using here. He says this, Jesus has been found worthy of greater honor than Moses, just as the builder of the house has greater honor than the house itself. For every house is built by someone, but God is the builder of everything. The builder of the house is worth of greater honor than that of the house itself. Moses wasn't the builder of God's house, because here, the house is referring not to a physical house, so you might think, well, Moses, he had quite a hand in building the tabernacle or of coordinating it. But actually, it's talking here about God's people, often described in the Bible as a house. Jesus, therefore, is the one who deserves greater respect. Jesus is God. He is the one who built and designed this house, who pulls it together. Therefore, Moses was just a part of that house. He's described as a servant, which we'll explore a little bit in a minute. He was not the builder. The builder is worthy of the honor. And there are also two roles that the writer highlights. That of a servant in God's house and that of the son over God's house. The writer tells us this twice, once in verse 2 and once in verse 5, that Moses was the faithful servant in God's house. He, Jesus, was faithful to the one who appointed him. just as Moses was faithful in all God's house. And in verse 5, Moses was faithful as a servant in all God's house, bearing witness to what would be spoken by God in the future. This servant role of Moses was important. But, so in verse 5, we see that Moses was given the task to speak about what was to come, and we read about that in Deuteronomy, of God's great plan for his people. But this was just the role of a messenger. Moses was merely a mouthpiece for God. He served faithfully in the house, completing the duties required of him, but that is all he does. Moses' role is always the lower position than the one who is over God's house, the Son, Jesus. The owner, the builder, the one with authority over the house is always going to be greater than the one who serves in it, the one who works in that house. And the idea here is also tied together with the fact that the son will inherit the house. It gives him authority, it gives him a vested interest in it. Compare that to the servant. While valuable, it's still only hired help. Through understanding that God is the creator of the house, we should see that he is the one who should receive that greater honor compared to those who are part or who serve in the house. And the writer of the Hebrews wants his recipients to understand that Jesus is better than Moses. So as we conclude this evening, when we hear the words of verse 1, that say, therefore, holy brothers and sisters who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle and high priest. What makes us think we can't do that? What distracts us from fixing our thoughts on Jesus Christ? What do we think is better than Jesus and so deserves our focus? Recall maybe what you made a note of earlier. Is it something that was created by God? Money, houses, cars, jobs, exam grades, filling in with others, our identity, our sexuality, the list goes on. God created all those things. So if he honored that which created, we forget the creator. And we've seen that the writer to the Hebrews says the creator is greater. The writer here wants us to see that Jesus is far better than anything else we could even think or comprehend of. Even things as honorable as Moses was, Jesus is better. Whatever you noted that distracts you, Jesus is better than that thing. Does the thing that pulls our thoughts away from focusing on Jesus, does it give us the hope that Jesus gives us? Does it give us the defeat of death? Does it give us that freedom and access to God? No, it can't. Only Jesus can do that. But why else would we focus on Jesus? If his greatness is not reason enough. The writer to the Hebrews gives us another pointer in verse 6. As believing that Jesus is better than anything in this world gives us confidence and hope. It will cause us to stand firm in our trust and love for Jesus. Now, as the musicians come up and prepare to play the song that we'll finish with, I wanted to share some words of a song that have been in my head as I've prepared this sermon over the last few weeks. And I think it's a helpful set of words that we can use as a prayer this evening. The songwriter writes this: in all my sorrows, Jesus is better. Make my heart believe. In all my victories, Jesus is better. Make my heart believe. More than any comfort, Jesus is better. Make my heart believe. More than all riches, Jesus is better. Make my heart believe. Our souls declaring, Jesus is better. Make my heart believe. Our song eternal, Jesus is better. Make my heart believe. Glory, glory, we have no other king but Jesus, Lord of all. Therefore, holy brothers and sisters, who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus.